podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies. I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of our Entrepreneur Tools, where we talk to entrepreneurs and service providers about problems entrepreneurs are facing and how we can solve them. As you may have seen from the headline already, we are talking today about how to build a tech team, especially the headhunting and the personality part. Therefore, I'd like to welcome back Tim. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thanks, Joe. And yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's a lot of work, as always, if you want to be an entrepreneur, but I'm happy to do that, and I love the flexibility. Talk about entrepreneurship. We may tell the people that down here in the show notes, there's a link to your last interview where we talked about headhunting, building up teams, how to headhunt, what to look for, yada, 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 all the stuff. Go down here in the show notes and there you'll find something. Plus, now this time we are talking about how to build a tech team best from scratch. So the optimal idea every entrepreneur has in mind: well, I have an idea, I make a PowerPoint out of that, I'll raise 10 million with that, and then I come to you and we build a tech team. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, that it's that simple. Yeah.
Okay, so we are talking about building a tech team. Doesn't necessarily mean an on-location tech team, but a tech team that has to work together. And I do believe, since you're the headhunter, you're more focused on the people and less on the technical skills. They have to have them. But that's something you cannot prove, like, in debt. That is something the CTO or the founder would need to prove. So what is the kind of level, what are the kind of blueprint you would need in order to really start headhunting? For example, a entrepreneur approaches you and says, hey, you know what, I'm short of a CTO, can you help me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that can be the case, absolutely. I mean, it really depends on, you know, where the company is in terms of its journey, right? And what sort of size it's at. So, I mean, if you're obviously, if someone comes to me as a founder and they want a CTO, then and this is perhaps their first or second employee, then that's a completely different search to an organization that perhaps has been going, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 years, has funding, you know, Series A, B, and wants a CTO. You know, what is already there? You know, is there a tech stack decided on? Is there a product? You know, is this a software startup or is this an e-commerce startup? So obviously the situation differs in terms of how I would approach it in depending on the situation of the startup.
Could you give us one or two examples? Let's say classical case, an e-commerce startup and something really deep tech working with AI. It's both startups are very new. We're focusing a little bit more on the newer startups here, even though we have scale-ups and bigger tech companies here in the interview as well. Because I do believe that's something entrepreneur needs to think about, need to worry about, because your first few hires, they are very important for the success of your company, and therefore you should really think it through. So how would you approach, let's say, a team of two or three founders and they're looking for a CTO?
I mean, I would, so first of all, I mean, they need to always think about why, right? Why are you hiring this person? What does this person need to do? What skills does this person need to have? You know, and then I'd look at the human skills of, okay, well, what are the values and behaviors that this person needs to encapsulate to be the right person for this, for the startup, because that's also important. It's not just the, you know, the right people for the right role, but for the right company as well. So these are things that need to be taken into consideration. The, you know, the skills, the experience, but also the, you know, the human side, the values and the behaviors of this person. So I would say that if somebody's coming to me, you know, what they need to be clear on, you know, what helps me is that you've got to have a number of things fixed, right? The first thing is, just as you would present for a pitch, I need to have the company presentation, right? You know, what is your company about? You know, what problem are you trying to solve? How do you solve it? Who are your customers going to be? What is the market? That, you know, so that I can actually go and find those people, right? That I can present this and get people excited. I need to understand what it is that you're doing, so I can entice and sort of inspire a candidate, because, you know, you're probably not going to be able to do it with money at this stage as a startup. You know, you're not an enterprise client, so you need to sell to people's emotions and their, you know, get them bought into the vision and the purpose. So we need that. We need to know what your company does. Also, then I talked about this, is what are the company values if you have them, right? So what are you looking for as a person? You know, are you looking for someone, you know, what could it be, right? Could it be, you know, integrity? Could it be gratitude? Could it be entrepreneurial? Could it be teamwork? You know, whatever those values are, what do you want me to find? You know, how do you identify someone to fit your company? You know, then we need the job description. What do you want this person to do? You know, is their role setting up the architecture, you know, of the tech stack, you know, deciding on the, you know, on all the tech, right? You know, what are the main programming languages you want to use? What are the, you know, are you going to be, you know, you're going to be, you know, is this cloud, you know, it's got to be cloud-based in this day and age. Is it going to be Google? You know, is it going to be Azure? Is it going to be AWS? These are the things that you want to think about before perhaps you get somebody in place, you know, because there's going to be pros and cons to each one. So, you know, those are things that you need to consider. You know, is this person going to be, are they also going to be hands-on? They probably should be at this stage if you're just hiring you know, this is your first kind of candidate. You don't want someone that just wants to design and an architect, right? You need someone who's going to roll their sleeves up and actually get their hands dirty and write some code, right? Because
they have to be able to do more than PowerPoint.
Exactly, right? And then you also want this person probably to, you know, to lead and to develop and coach people, because you probably haven't got the money to hire star players at the moment, right? You're probably going to have to do it with, you know, young, hungry, you know, enthusiastic junior candidates, right? Not all, but some, to get people kind of, you know, utilize that manpower and inspire them and drive them towards completing a vision, which will be getting your, you know, prototype developed as quickly as possible. So, you know, those are all things you've got to take into consideration. You know, regards to the tech skills. And then I've said, you know, what about the, you know, also what about the financial compensation? What are you paying this person, right? What is in your budget? You know, are you going to do it purely through salary? Are you going to do it through equity? You know, what does that look like? And, you know, are you going to do it sort of bonus, you know, related, you know, milestone related? Okay. You know, reach A and you receive the X, right? You know, these are all ways of doing it. You know, the other thing I think is have you got an employment contract, right? This person's going to be an employee. So have you got one? Is it good? Has it been checked by someone? Because this is a classic mistake that, you know, startups kind of get. You know, they're going through the process of hiring people, and then they get to the offer stage, they send an offer to a candidate, and the candidate rejects because they, you know, they look at the contract and they think, my God, you know, this is not compliant, and there are things in here that shouldn't be in here. And then it's kind of difficult to move back, you know, to go back from there. So, you know, it's important to get things like that fixed up front so that you're not kind of then trying to, you know, swim against the tide and sort of reverse the situation when the kind of the bad taste is already there.
Let me quickly get an idea of like a little wrap up for our audience, what we talked so far about. My understanding is, first, you need to understand the company, the values of the company, the pitch deck, and their kind of get a fit for the CTO in terms of environment. You need to know the technical skills they need to provide, and the incentive structure they are going to put in place. Do you talk to them about the incentive structure? What is market conform? What is not?
Exactly. Yes, I would. So this would be what I want to have at the beginning, right? So I usually, what I in the solution that I set up and offer to my clients, I get them to provide this information up front. So these are things that you need to think about before we have the first conversation. Okay. And then, you know, then we'll set up an alignment call. So this is where I'll consult the client and find out from them, okay, so what is there? You know, what are they looking for, right? Is this feasible or is this a unicorn? Is the salary in line with market expectations for someone of this caliber or not? You know, how is their employment contract? Are there things in there that I think are shocking and need rewritten? So yeah, this all comes through in a...
For the shocking content, I would be interested... What is stupid stuff you've seen in employment contracts? Something like you're not permitted to wear cowboy hats in the office or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, things like, you know, unreasonable notice periods, you know, things that are, you know, I've seen this done, you know, I've seen things that...
Notice period. So you want to leave your job and you have a notice period of something like 12 months or... only at the end of a quarter, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You could have, you know, six months, for example, you know, that's a long time, you know. Or, you know, perhaps if it's sort of like one day, for example, you know, you also sort of get people, you know, and there are obviously restrictions in Germany. You know, Germany's a different country with different employment regulations, right? And you can't, you know, this is sometimes difficult when you get companies from the US who are setting up entities in Germany and they need to be educated on, you can't have that in the contract. You know, there are things like, you know, paternity leave and maternity leave it's legal here and there is a certain... Yeah.
And you have a minimum amount of vacation days, 20 something. I know in the US it's quite common to have just like 10 PTO. And in Germany, when you're sick, you're sick. If you're sick on vacation, you can even get your vacation days back. So it's completely different. And I totally get if there's somebody coming over from the US, that's everything I have to offer them. Oh, dang it.
Exactly. So there are, you know, there are things that are, you know, need to be understood and put into the contract here. And that is also, you know, a service that I would provide to a client.
What is the most frequent complaint you're getting from like US-based companies when you educate them on the German employment laws? Because a lot of it is enshrined in some laws, but a lot of it is also by judges. So it's always difficult and there are different ruling on different things, but basically there is like a big fundament where you can build on. Mm-hmm. And that's what we talked about, like legal requirements, minimum days of vacation, maximum work hours, mandatory maternity leave, yada, yada, yada. That's all the things an employer cannot get around in Germany. But what is like the number one complaint from foreign companies?
I think hot holidays is one that's quite common, right? I mean, you know, in the US you don't get as many, there aren't as many mandatory holidays that are given to, employees. And so it's sometimes difficult to explain to clients coming from the US who want to set up in Germany about, the number of holidays that employees get here.
I just found a list here, and it says that on average in the state of Baden-Württemberg, many people would know, for example, for Stuttgart, the headquarter of companies like Porsche, Mercedes, and something like this, on average, employees get 28.8, as I said, it's an average, so 29 days of vacation, and in total with the public holidays, they're gone for almost 41 days within the year.
And then, then there are things like sick days as well, right? There are probably an average in Germany, 10 sick days per year. So then you're looking at, what's that? Now we're looking at 50 days out of 250 working days. So that's,
Oh, I'm not familiar with the regulations in other countries, but basically here in Germany, the parents can get sick leave on their child. So basically, if the child is sick, the mom gets a paid day off to take care of her kids, children, however you want to call it. Also, fathers can do this, and there's an upper limit to that, but that's also legal in Germany.
So look, there are differences, and I think the US is more of a hire and fire culture, right? And that's possible to do. So there are stronger, definitely workers' rights here in Germany.
And we may just add that it's very, very difficult to get rid of an employee if the employee doesn't want that. It's usually involving either long trials in front of employment courts, Arbeitsgerichte, or very high payment. That's usually the case. But now we got this out of the way and shown how awesome it is to be employed in Germany, and I lost all of that since I'm venturing out for myself, so I don't have even a single paid day off. Don't worry, guys, you're not alone. That's the life of an entrepreneur. We got the CTO, we got him or her, or ex, how do you call it? Him, her, hired, and or non-binary person, and then what's next? How do you then help the startup to build further up the company? Because I would assume a CTO, he knows some coders, he knows some engineers, he knows some people. And is this usually a way the first one or two employees get onboarded? Or is it something that then the entrepreneur said, no, we actually don't want that. We take people from wherever and just throw together a team.
It can be, absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, I think especially in the early days, there'll generally be a lot of hiring that's done from their own network, right? So even with the CTO, it could very well be that the CTO is actually a friend of the founders, right? They've probably, they've come from industry, so they'll generally know somebody that is, tech minded, right? And I see this a lot actually, that there's a number of startups that kind of they pick their sort of founding team based on the strengths of those people. So there might be somebody that is a if it's an insurtech company, right? So there'll be somebody that is the kind of insurance expert as a co-founder. There'll be somebody that is the tech expert as a co-founder, to take care of the actual the product tech that they're building, the software or the platform, and then there might be someone who's comes from marketing or sales, right? That will be the kind of the chief sales officer or chief marketing officer. So that's one way of doing it, is that founders will have already thought about their strengths and weaknesses and kind of pick their core team to start with, to provide a right balance of this. And that may continue for the early hires, right? That they then know somebody, the CTO, as you said, they've worked with someone they know and trust, and they get that person in to start. And this can happen using your own network.
Would you encourage
this? I honestly,
in terms of there is part of the team forming time that is just not there. Teams can perform faster if the people already know each other. Is that something you recommend or say, you have to look at
this? I would, right? In the beginning, I would recommend people using their own network to start with. And I actually don't very often work with companies beyond, below sort of like 5 employees, right? Because they're generally, they don't have the money. And I wouldn't actually recommend, I work with clients that I believe I can provide value to. And it's not that I can't provide them with value, but it's they need to be very careful about their spend at the moment. And so if they can find someone through their own network, great, do it. And as you said, right?
Also translating into, you're an expensive headhunter.
Well, I mean, no, I wouldn't. I don't even believe that. I don't think I am, but I could go into that later. But I think in general, it's a service that is, it can be, it's a cost, right? And so as an entrepreneur and that's just started up, you're looking to save money, right? You're being prudent. And if you can outsource something, outsource it. If you can do it yourself, do it yourself. You know, if it's sort of efficient to do that. And if you can find someone from your own network as opposed to paying a headhunter for it and have a good result, then great, do it. But obviously, as that company scales, you can't keep doing that, right? You only know so many people. You only have so many first connections, second connections, and there's a finite amount of people that you can do. And obviously a finite, as it gets bigger and bigger, you need to become, you need more experts, and you don't know all those experts. You can only know so many people. So you start having to go outside of your circle. And that's where someone like myself comes into, I have a larger network and I have a different network, and I can find people and test people that you don't have the time to do because you're trying to grow your user base. You're trying to get investment. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to find you talent. So, you know, you go to experts like me.
If I would now get a little bit further, number 4 would be get familiar with the restrictions, with legal restrictions for the employment contract, get an employment contract for your tech employees, for your CTO. Next one would be, take number 5 would be, take the network of the CTO to get tech talent. And then I would now deduce somewhere around like 2-digit employees, something, a company around 10 employees. That mm-hmm. is the time you can really think about an external headhunter, because on average, as you've seen, there is an end to the network of the founders, and then you need external help in further developing the tech team, right?
Could I just take it back a little, Joe, and just to, you know, you said, okay, so don't use a headhunter when it comes to, you know, I've said, okay, sorry, you didn't, it's not what you said. I was saying it perhaps might be better to use your own network to start with. That's fine. But what I would consider is perhaps using, getting advice on, and this is where I help startups, is, okay, what about your hiring process, right? So, okay, I perhaps haven't, you don't necessarily need me to find your people, okay? You've got your network, that's fine. But, okay, what is your hiring process, right? What are you testing for? How are you testing for it? How are you measuring it? What about your recruitment process, right? How are you reducing unconscious bias? Do you know what unconscious bias is? How are you test? You know, these are all things that I can help you with. And that's, sorry.
And that was exactly the point I was going at, because if your company scales to like a certain degree, my personal experience is something like if I had a team of 10, 15 people, I would approximately know what they're doing. But after that, you need to process also to get new employees on board, as you said, recruiting. Mm-hmm. But also what's very important, what many startups forget, is the onboarding. How do you get people in the team? How do you show them their duties? How do you make them familiar with report this to that, report this to that? And if you see that, stand up and scream in the room or something like this. That is something people need to think about. Entrepreneurs need to think about. And it's very dry. It's very boring, but there are a lot of good examples out there for this stuff. Do you have some recommendations, or can you provide me with a few links that I can link down here in the show notes for people just to start thinking about this, a hiring process, a hiring policy, an onboarding process, something like this? Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so this is what I designed. I designed for this purpose. So I designed a plug and play hiring solution that would help startups design a fair, a consistent, robust hiring process of checking candidates on their using data and values in the hiring process, right? So you want to hire a front-end developer with, you know, JavaScript and React. Okay, well, how are you going to go about that? So, you know, how are you going to test for those technical skills? Do you have your own technical tests, or do you need to use a platform for those technical tests? How are you going to, okay, so you've got your values. How do you check for those values? You don't just ask, are you entrepreneurial, yes or no? You know, where's the evidence? How are you going to do that? How are you going to record it? What about, you know, how are you going to reduce biases? You know, a lot of people, and I've done this myself, is the affinity bias, you know, looking for the mini-me's, right? We sort of hire people that are like us, and it doesn't necessarily, and it's often not the case, that they're not the best people for the role. They're just people that we like the most. So how are you going to reduce all these things? And that's why, you know, I designed this process to give people the a framework so that they don't have to think about how to design this process. I can give it to them, and then we can put candidates through it. And there's also things that, you know, they can do themselves. You know, there's lots of different testing platforms they could use themselves. You know, there's lots of sort of help on questioning. You know, or they can reach out to me. I'm happy to provide like free. I've designed a value scorecard that I give to clients for free that they can just type in their values in there and give them some prompts as to open questions to test, and they can go and do it. You know, because that will help them get people who are better match to their values, and therefore more likely to stay longer and add value to the client.
Totally. And for the onboarding, we are looking for something, but that's also something a company, an entrepreneur would need to think about extensively, because the better the onboarding, the faster an employee can perform. It's really crucial. It sounds like, yeah, well, I show them the desk, I give them some work, and then they'll start. It usually doesn't work like that. But now we got to the stage, okay, this is how we hire a CTO. This is how you may or may not use his or her network. And then we get into like a hiring policy, onboarding, yada, yada, yada. And that is basically the process of growing up a tech team from the little bit more administrative side. Could you also add a little bit of experience, what worked, what didn't work, in order to build up a great tech team?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about some of them, right? Sometimes when you're, as I said, sometimes people don't they don't hire objectively, right? They hire on a CV, you know, and they sort of rely on their, or they've not been able to eliminate bias. And I'll give you a good example. So, you know, just because somebody has been a developer for 8 years doesn't necessarily mean that person is right for your team. I'm sure that that person can code, okay? But if they're not a team player, if they're disruptive, if they're, you know, perhaps, you know, negative or not bought into the company vision, you know, that can be that can have a sapping effect, right?
Yes. Plus, I've personally experienced in whatever type of job is out there, there are people who are basically leading their teams, their company, everything has to go through my desk. I have to see everything. And that is not how you can manage, right, a really high-performing tech team. And it also has a side effect that this person who is in the center of everything, he or she is crucial, and they're also the bottleneck. So that is something I'm always looking for not to get done. Basically, I try to split these duties as much as possible, break them down onto team leader level or even lower. And that also, this breaking down of tasks, this as few as possible reviews, but as good as possible reviews, that is also something people need to have the skill for. It's something you can partially learn, but partially it's just the personality of people, how they work.
Yeah, exactly. You know, are they, and that's the challenge. That's it, is one of the challenges, right? If you've worked in a large organization, you know, in a corporate, and you've used to sort of lots of different tasks being done by lots of different people, then you're going to find it very difficult. And a lot of people do, you know, coming into a startup where you're sort of having to play more than one role, and you need to be proactive and show initiative and sort of wear lots of different hats, because it just needs doing, right? And it sometimes you've just got to pick that up and not wait for somebody else to do it.
Speaking about that, what is your experience? Does it work pretty well if you have employees coming from a corporate to startup, or is it better for a early middle stage startup to actually look for people who are already at startups?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think it depends. I don't want to sort of there are success stories for both scenarios, and there's failures for both scenarios. It really does depend on the person and what their mindset is. You know, there are people that have worked in corporates, and I know I have, right, where you kind of feel limited, right, and you're sort of boxed in, and you want to, you like to have range and depth and do lots of different things, and so, you know, you thrive in a startup because you love the adventure and the challenge and the variety of that. Or there's other people that drown in it because it's too much and they don't know where to start, and they want to be specialized and don't want to look left or right on something and feel overwhelmed. So it depends on the candidate, and you've got to dig deep into that in the interview process. You know, asking them about their, checking, you know, competencies of perhaps, you know, where they've been proactive, where they've gone outside of their comfort zone, and giving you examples to give you the confidence as an employer that, okay, so they haven't had that experience, but they could thrive in it. Whereas somebody that's worked in startups, they know how it works, right? You know that they understand what is expected of them. So there's not as much of a risk, but sometimes you need to take the risk, right? Because the talent's worth it. And how do you work in a startup if you've never, you know, you never worked in a startup before, right? You've got to, everybody has to have a first time sometime.
Any famous last words, last recommendations, like insider tips, how to really get well-performing teams together. And don't get me wrong, I know a very important part is the boss. I've heard frequently that people are coming for a salary and leaving due to a bad boss.
Yeah. I mean, that can often be the case, right? But you know, boss is one thing, but you know, I remember somebody saying to me once about, okay, yes, it's not just about your boss, you know, you've got to manage up, and it's also on you to influence and shape that environment, and have you presented feedback to your boss? Have you told them about the impact that, you know, first of all, are they aware? Are they aware of the impact that their words are having on you and other people? And, you know, make it observational, right? Don't just make it emotional. Where are the facts? Have you presented the data to them that on this day or on this occasion, this was said and this was the reaction or the outcome, you know, so that they have an opportunity to see it? Because, you know, some people they're just not aware, and their perception and their reality is very different from, you know, your perception and your reality. We don't all think the same. So address it rather than, you know, suffer in silence, because at least with addressing it, you have a chance of making it better. If you just suffer in silence, it's never going to change.
That are actually pretty good words, and actually people who are suffering in silence, they are much more open to be approached by headhunters like you.
That's true. Yeah, they are. But what I would say is that if they're not, they also need to be accountable for how they conduct themselves in the next company, because the same thing could be a serial problem for you. If you don't, you know, if you don't speak your mind, and if you don't, you know, provide feedback to your bosses, then when they do something wrong, they may not be aware, and you may get unhappy, and you may end up leaving again. And then it's going to be a, you know, I think we all need to be accountable for our part in a situation.
Well, actually, there's nothing I have to add here. We'll try to wrap up the points you've made. I think you made a lot of very good points down here in the show notes, and you'll provide us with some links for further reading, because in like 30 minutes, 35 minutes, you cannot really build up a good tech team, but we just wanted to get you started on thinking how to do that. This is the start of a journey, and it most likely will never end, but you have to get started at one point. In China, they say even a 10,000 li long journey starts with a small step, and that was your first one towards a high-performing tech team. Tim, thank you very much. It was a pleasure having you as a guest. And everybody who'd like to learn more, go down here in the show notes. As always, there will be Tim's LinkedIn profile, and of course, all the links we've promised, depending on where you're listening to this or watching this. Maybe the links don't work. Just go to www.startupray.io/blog and look for our interview here. Tim, thank you very much. I enjoyed again very much having you as guest here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Totally my pleasure. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.